Sue Kedgley and Peter Field joining us. Harassment of our members of parliament has increased over 8 years. 98% reported some form of harassment. 27% received death threats, and women were considerably more likely to face abuse. This has psychological costs, and some are saying it is a threat to democracy. With us is Professor Susanna Everi-Palmer, who was the lead author on the study and is with us very soon. We're going to get her up very, very soon in a minute. But I'll go to you, Sue, because I don't know whether or not you had first-hand experience of this as a Member of Parliament.
Thankfully, no, because when I left, which was 2011, social media wasn't as prevalent. So, no, I was really spared this. But, you know, it is horrific. I mean, 98% of MPs saying that they've experienced online abuse. I mean, what it's like a case study showing how our social media platforms have become, well, they've become really a platform for online abuse and violence and causing incredible harm. And of course, the organisations themselves, the corporations, you know, the Googles and the Facebook, gouging several billion out of our economy, saying, oh, it's nothing to do with us. No, we're not to blame. We don't have to, you know, it's just a sort of slight problem for our society, that's, you know, undermining and polarising our society. So it's a huge issue globally, and it needs to be tackled here in New Zealand.
Well, with us now is Professor Everi-Palmer, who was that lead author on the study out today. Professor Palmer, Everi-Palmer, kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora.
What really alerted me was, well, not just the vast majority receiving some of harassment, but 27% receiving death threats. Now I started thinking to myself, gosh, you know, here I am, I'd walk to work or bus to work, get into the lift, go up, and thinking, is that what I could possibly face at some stage in my professional career? It sounds extraordinary, but just enlighten us more about this study.
Yeah, well, so what we did was we surveyed MPs, and it was an anonymous survey, and we were investigating the experiences of harassment and violence. So we asked MPs to tell us what they had experienced and also how it had affected them. And we analysed the data statistically and thematically and compared the results to a similar survey that we ran in 2014. Do you want to hear some of the main findings?
Yeah, a couple of key findings would be great, Susanna.
Yeah, so almost all forms of abuse had increased compared to 2014. And the abuse was the standard thing that you might expect, like getting nasty message on social media, but also really horrible stuff, like being approached in public, getting threats to, you know, be harmed, people following after you, coming to your house, interfering with your property, and maybe worse of all, threats towards people's families. And what we found, maybe not surprisingly, was that the psychological impact had increased, with many MPs being afraid that they or someone close to them might be attacked, seriously hurt, or worse. And lastly, the nature of abuse directed at women MPs was different. So it was much more personal. Women, for example, were around six times as likely to have members of their family, like their kids, threatened.
Good grief. Well, let's go. We'll come back to you, Sue. Peter, what's your take on this? And you're in, perhaps to a far lesser extent, but you're also in the public eye there. I mean, don't know if you've had any issues around this yourself.
No, I would say that's not true. I'll try to say, try to behave on Radio New Zealand to make sure that I avoid that. And, you know, it's very difficult. I think Sue and others are right about the medium. The medium is the message, was an old Marshall McLuhan notion, and we have changed the way we communicate. I guess I would make a distinction here, Wallace, and ask our professor. Words are not deeds, right? So following someone, coming to their house, pursuing people, making threats, these actually are crimes, and they're acts. Violence is another issue when it comes to words, and words are not deeds. And I think it's important still probably that we should make that distinction. Boy, I wish there were more civility in our public life. But words are not deeds, and we probably still want to make that distinction pretty hard and fast.
Susanna?
I guess what we were hearing were that there were both words and deeds, and the words were spilling over into deeds. And that was part of this, I guess, pervasive fear that people were feeling, is that they didn't know whether someone was just up late at night, you know, filled with anger and expressing themselves, or really whether they were a fixated person with grievance who was going to come after them. But many MPs had experienced that, people coming after them, like you say, did the criminal activity as well, and police were often involved.
Right. I don't know, Sue, how I'd feel if that happened to me. It hasn't happened to me, you know, find out that you're being followed, or, heaven forbid, getting a knock on your door, maybe a knock on your door while you're out. I mean, it's quite extraordinary, but needless to say, this happens to those in the public life. Do you want to come back into the conversation?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it would be shattering if that happened to you, Wallace. But the interesting thing is if someone on Radio New Zealand made a threat of rape, they'd be taken to the court, you know, on any mainstream media. And yet the social media, there was chat rooms on the Manosphere with thousands of threats of rape and how to get away with it. And there's no consequence at all. Because it's anonymous, and even if it's not anonymous, there's no comeback. So, because effectively social media is completely unregulated. Now, in overseas countries, such as Europe, America, well, no, not America, actually, but Australia and Europe and the UK, they're introducing legislation to try to sheet home responsibility to the companies who are effectively, you know, selling unsafe products. I mean, they're making money out of this product, like Facebook, which is causing huge social harm. So they are passing legislation, passing regulations to try to protect people from this online harm and abuse, and we have to follow suit. So I'm part of a group. We think this should be a cross-party. There should be a cross-party group established in Parliament to look at this whole issue, to work out how do we follow other countries and protect our citizens. Because, I mean, looking at what's happened to these MPs, but that's just a little microcosm of what's happening across the whole of society.
Okay, so you are right. So you know quite a bit about this. You're part of this coalition. Online safety. Finally, Professor Evry Palmer, so what is a possible solution? How do we just dial this down? How do we really get people to really dial down, particularly, I guess, online, and so that it doesn't spill over into deeds?
Yeah, I think Sue's making a number of good points there, and looking at the way people engage online and having zero tolerance for that, and also for all of us reflecting about how we engage online as well, because there is something called the online disinhibition effect, where people somehow behave differently on their keyboard than they might in real life. So that work is really important. I also think that, you know, we need to be thinking about people who are in the public eye, like our politicians, and making sure that they have cyber safety training as part of their induction so that they're prepared for that. And resources
and
for
support
home security.
And protection.
And support and protection. Because the fact that almost half of women MPs were not feeling safe in their own home, that's completely unacceptable. You know, that's not just a workplace risk. That's not part of the job. That is not okay that people, you know, don't feel safe.
And it's a threat to democracy because it'll put women off from putting themselves forward to stand for Parliament.
Yeah, absolutely. People might be less likely to stand for parliamentary.
It puts men off, too, to hear about these things.
Sure.
All real men are put off by this equally, I promise you.
I do want to make one more point, is that it wasn't just women who were experiencing this. Mm. So although the nature of the threats was different often, there are a lot of men who are experiencing pretty horrific stuff as well.
Professor Susanna Evry-Palmer, the lead author on that study out today. Kia ora, thank you for your time. 14 away from 7, the panel, RNZ National. Lovely to have you here. Now, just another email through. One of many, my role was one of many disestablished from a tech company in the private sector last month. The job losses were related to cuts in public health sector projects focused on innovation, which has been underfunded for decades. Replacement of legacy infrastructure and digitising manual systems is badly needed. It'll cost more in the future, and not doing it will cost lives in some cases. Healthcare improvement, my opinion, should be bipartisan. I'm still looking for a job and seriously considering overseas opportunities. Just wondering, Wallace, if I do have to move to Australia, do I still get my tax cut? I'll find out. Thanks for the email. Now, time for I've Been Thinking. I'll start with Peter Field. I've been thinking. What's been on your mind, Peter?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I had something to say, but I realized that when we had Chariots of Fire or whatever that is from 1982, I just couldn't help but go back to music and remind ourselves that, at least for me in 1982, I liked Dixie's Midnight Runners, and I thought Come On Eileen was an infinitely better song. And I hope, Wallace, that you don't get any threats for your support of country music the past while.
Well,
so thank you for that.
You know, it was because of you that we had a country music week on, for those who have been listening for a wee while. And it was so popular, we are thinking of having another one. So country music week part two, who's keen, 2101, and recommendations. Thank you, Peter. Sue Kesley, I've been thinking.
Well, Wallace, I've been struggling to understand why one of our government's top health priorities is rushing a bill through Parliament to make a drug that is the active ingredient of methamphetamine more widely available in New Zealand. I mean, when you listen to David Seymour hailing this as some sort of health triumph, you'd think that pseudoephedrine must be some sort of wonder drug. But actually, all it does is reduce symptoms if you've got a blocked nose. And it's already available on prescription. And there are plenty of other effective decongestants on the market. So why is he claiming that this is some great health reform, especially when we know, pseudoephedrine is a stimulant, can be used to give a high, got incredibly bad health effects. Increases your blood pressure, heart palpitations, shouldn't be taken by anyone with high blood pressure, blah, blah. Very easy to abuse, become addicted to, very dangerous if taken in high doses. It's the active ingredient, of course, of methamphetamine, it's considered a gateway drug for pee. So when it was announced, one brave lone chemist spoke up and said, "I think making this drug more widely available will do more harm than good. And why would we increase the risk to society by making it available without prescription when there are so many effective alternatives that can be used, including good old-fashioned Vicks Vapor Rub?"
Oh, look, I'm a big fan of the old Vicks Vapor Rub, don't you get me wrong. In fact, that's my go-to. But a pharmacology expert did say, quote, "At the end of the day, it is difficult to argue that the majority of the law-abiding population should have to suffer and be prevented from seeking relief from the pain and discomfort of congestion due to the illegal activities of a small section of society."
But they're not, because there's so many effective remedies available on the market. Was there anyone clamouring for this drug to be used? I don't think so. Doctors weren't prescribing it.
Very good. All right, Sue Kesley, thank you. Peter Field, thank you. Here's one. Country Music Night. Hell yeah, brother. That's coming your way. Briefly, before we go to the Giant Pumpkin, and you're going to want to stick around to hear this, I did want to, because we got talking about this in the office, what is the one place you've never been to in your hometown? Now, I lived in Dunedin 13 years, never went to Larnet Castle. My wonderful producer, Ayana, an Aucklander, she's never been to Motat. So here's a couple. I lived in Wanaka for 17 years. I've never been to Puzzling World. Kathy says, I lived in London for 8 years. I never visited the Tower of London. Round the panel on this, Peter.
Well, of course, yes, I confess. I lived in New York, and you know, as a cynical New Yorker, and I am that, I don't have really something to say about congestion, but boy, did we avoid tourist spots. So Times Square, nope. In fact, as you know, Wallace, I never went to the Statue of Liberty in my life.
You're kidding me. What? So you live in New York, and you see it, as you're driving through, you haven't been up there.
Yeah, it's almost a snobbish thing. That's really embarrassing. What's also embarrassing, truly, is I'm from Christchurch, and I can't think of what would be some place that someone would say they've never been to and is iconic.
That's okay, terrible. So there you go. I don't think anyone across the country can beat that. Peter, a New Yorker, he's never been to the Statue of Liberty. Sue?
Well, I must confess, I lived in New York for 8 years and never went to the Statue of Liberty. But
there we go.
Closer to home in Wellington. I must admit I've never been to the Green Parrot, but then I've never wanted to go. But I did want to go to the National War Memorial Carillion. It's a sort of 50-metre tower with all these bells, and you used to be able to walk up and it played these magnificent sort of bells. Well, of course, now it's closed for earthquake re-strengthening and looks like it'll be closed indefinitely. So, again, by not going, I might have missed out forever.
Well, Wallace, what about you? What's the biggest surprise, a place that you wouldn't have expected to go that you thought was a tourist trap and that you loved?
Easy. Hamilton Gardens.
Yeah.
I mean it. I've been 3-4 times. I'm not a big fan of botanic gardens. I find them quite dull. So when my mother said, "You've got to go," I said, "Really? Hamilton Gardens?" I went. I was astonished. Really was astonished. So, yeah, that's a little tip there. All right, 8 to 7, the panel, RNZ National. Now, to someone who has long had, it's been a bit of a grim day, really, so I wanted to finish on a lighter note. To someone who has long had a dream to paddle down a river in a giant pumpkin, but alas, time and time again, his pumpkins kept rotting off and dying. One got as big as a softball. So imagine his delight when his friend grew a 407-kilogram pumpkin. That is the weight of a horse. With us is Adam Farquharson, who donned a sailor's hat and a pipe. He's with us to share his tale. Adam, welcome.
Kia ora, how are you?
Oh, kia ora, Adam. Good to have you in New Zealand. The photo evidence is on our website. You can go check it out, the panel. Sorry, rnz.co.nz/thepanel. Adam, you did it.
Yeah, I certainly, well, I did. My mum was appalled when I told her what I was up to. I think she's changed her mind now, but yeah, it was a long time coming. And the best thing is that it's actually pretty hard to grow one of those pumpkins, and my mate did all the hard work, even hollowed it out, and all I had to do was scribble Cinderella on the side, jump in and hop down the river.
All right, before we get into the big pumpkin and how you rode it, have you been surprised by the international reaction you've had on this?
Surprise would be a fair understatement there, Wallace. It's unbelievable. I mean, I put a post up on Friday night that my wife said, "Oh, you should put something on Facebook." It was two lines saying, "This is what I'm planning to do tomorrow. I want to be the first person to paddle a pumpkin at 11 o'clock at the race course." 1,000 people there. The first vehicle we saw was an ambulance. So I thought, well, that's not good. But blown away. And then I went and got a load of firewood for mum. And by the time we got back, I had, like, missed calls from ABC saying, "We want to interview you." I'm like, I'm getting, like, emails from friends overseas going, "Oh, you paddle a pumpkin, I'm in Japan." I'm like, "You what?" it's mind-blowing. It's unbelievable. And I can say to people now, I'm famous and I can actually mean it. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
It may well be that you might get a call from Prime Minister Albanese. You might even have that pumpkin alongside Farlap's heart.
Well, it's a little bit late for that. So the biggest problem with the pumpkin, it was so big, we couldn't get out of the river without machinery. So when we finished with it, we got a double-ended axe and actually chopped it up, put it in a trailer. It's currently feeding some cattle out of my in-law's farm.
Well, Peter, if there's one thing to brighten your day, it's a grown man in a sailor's cap and pipe travelling down the river.
Well done, well done. And I love the notion that you type Cinderella on it, because I asked my kids about this and they said, I wondered if they thought it was a carriage at first and it just turned into a pumpkin at midnight as you were on the water.
She certainly got a bit uglier after midnight, but I did get asked by somebody, "Why do you call it Cinderella?" It's like, it's a pumpkin. Like, what else are you going to call it? It's, well, like, in all honesty, you think about it.
Sue?
Well, I just think it's completely brilliant. And I see that you said in some of your vast amount of publicity that you did it for no other reason than to amuse yourself and make people smile. And I can't think of any better reason to do anything, really.
No, you're dead right. And it did amuse me. I had to keep my head on to paddle my way down. It's quite a fast river. It's not as quick as Hooker Falls, but you had to plan ahead a bit. But I had a smile on my dial the whole way down. It was magnificent. It was so, and watching people follow me down the river, they were running to keep up, which I thought was good exercise too, making people healthy. It's it was something I'll certainly never forget, and I don't think anybody's going to let me forget it either.
What is it, Adam? What does it say about humanity that you've people across
the, such a cord?
Yeah, people have gravitated to an adult paddling down the river in a huge pumpkin. What does it say about us? Does it say that this is the sort of joy, the simple joy that we need these days?
I think it is, and I will just correct you there. I'm only an adult on paper. Certainly don't act like one. I think you're right. If I wanted to really lay it on thick, it's the childlike doing something the kid would do because it's fun and you want to do it and it's there.
Yeah.
I remember Steven Spielberg, the director, he said, he was asked about his success. He said, well, it's because I've never grown up.
Well, I certainly haven't, and now I've proven it. So if there was any doubt.
Are they hard to... Oh, no, Peter, you go.
I did. I just wanted to say that if you need a soundtrack, Wallace has already found it for you on this day in 1982.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, Chariots of Fire, have you heard it? Da-da-da-da-da.
Well, I play trumpet, and in the school band we play that badly, I've got to say. But, yes, I'm aware of the song. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So the pumpkin's being chopped up just on the growing side. Is it actually quite difficult to grow? Because it's Australia's biggest pumpkin, the weight of a horse, is it very difficult to grow to that size?
I can't say, because the one I grew got to the size of a softball, shriveled up, fell off the vine and died pretty hilariously. My friends were in a competition, so it wasn't good. But Mark spent 4 months. It was 71 days the pumpkin was on the vine, I understand. He had to have a tent over it and a fan going all the time to stop it getting damaged, because if it's blemished, you can't put it in the show. And the fan was there to stop it going mouldy. So it was an incredible effort on his part. And, essentially he did all the hard work and I came in and stole all the glory.
Is he envious at all of your fame?
He loves it. So, I was talking to him just about half an hour ago, and he thinks it's absolutely outstanding. So that his pumpkin, instead of just getting chopped up and, chucked out to the cows beforehand, he got to do a cruise first.
Oh, well, the texts are coming in, Adam. Someone says, down the river and a pumpkin. It was a good effort. And on that note, Adam, well done. And finally, what's the next big adventure? A giant eggplant?
I jokingly said maybe hollow out a couple of marrows and go water skiing, but I'm not sure that my wife's going to come to that one, but we'll see how we go. But Mark is planning to grow a pumpkin next year, and he's going to try for 600 kilos, so it might be a tandem effort.
You can take that one over Niagara Falls, please.
Yes.
Oh, mate, this guy's a maniac. I reckon he'll do it too.
Okay, Adam, all the best.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.